Welcome to the Free to Choose Media Podcast. Today's podcast is the discussion portion of Created Equal, part of Volume 5 of the 10-part public television series Free to Choose. Milton Friedman is joined by other distinguished guests at the University of Chicago to discuss some of the ideas presented in the documentary segment of Created Equal. Listen now and don't forget to subscribe to get updates each week for the Free to Choose Media Podcast.
And we now join our guests here at the University of Chicago.
Mr. Friedman is right that all over the world, people are beginning to stir and are striving for a measure of equality, for a measure of justice. But I think he demeans and trivializes those struggles when he tells us all that we can't all have Marlene Dietrich's legs. Moreover, he confuses us by using the term freedom. I think what Mr. Friedman means by the term freedom is economic license. And the economic license of those who control property and those who control capital has in fact been a threat not only to equality, but a threat to the freedom of peoples all over the world, and not only in Europe and in the United States, but in Africa, in Asia, and in Latin America.
Let me get two other reactions now to that idea that this new ideal of equality, equality in this world's goods, represents a very serious threat to freedom. Peter Jay.
Well, first, as the only British person on this panel, perhaps you would allow me to say in passing that I think that many of the things which Professor Friedman says about the British experience in the last 30 years are a gross distortion and a gross travesty of what's actually gone on in Britain, and I hope that we'll have an opportunity to come back in the course of the discussion.
Very much.
But I think that your question brings up what is, to me, the absolutely central confusion in the exposition that we saw in the film. And I'm a great admirer of Professor Friedman. I've studied him, I've listened to him, I've debated with him, and always before I found him at least clear, even when he's been wrong. Today I found him grossly confused, and in this specific and all-important respect. Is he telling us that absolute equality is a mistaken objective? In which case, I think he is tilting at windmills, he is attacking a straw man. There is almost nobody on the other side of that argument. Or is he saying that any concern at all by societies and governments with reducing inequality is mistaken, is not only in conflict with freedom and efficiency and other human objectives, but is absolutely wrong? In which case, I think he's talking absolute nonsense. His arguments tend to support the first rather platitudinous proposition that absolute equality is still less absolute sameness is a foolish and exaggerated objective. His arguments do not at all support the second claim that it is wrong to concern oneself with distribution of income and wealth and reducing inequality at all.
First of all, I would disagree violently with the notion that the people are stirring. A very small handful of intellectuals have generated an enormous amount of noise. When I look at opinion polls, particularly if I look at opinion polls of blacks in the United States, most blacks in the United States do not take any strong position in favor of equality of results. In fact, most of the polls that I've seen of blacks put them, if you want to use this expression, very well to the right of most intellectuals on most of these social issues. It is not the people who are stirring, it is a handful of intellectuals. The question is not absolute equality, it's a question of what concept of equality you're aiming at, whether you're getting it absolutely or to one degree or the other. Are you aiming at a concept of equality of opportunity at the outset, or are you aiming at a concept of equality of results? It's also not a question of whether it's material goods only, whether it's material goods, status, or whatnot. Again, the same question comes back. Are you thinking about equality of opportunity, prospective equality, or are you thinking about retrospective results at the finish line? And I think that's the crucial distinction.
What I mean by equality is the concept I would like to see pursued is a concept that Tom Sowell just discussed of equality of opportunity. The concept that increasingly is being taken up by the intellectual community is equality of results. Now, nobody, and I agree with Peter, nobody means identity.
Well, nobody, you said so on the film. You said so yourself.
Me.
Absolutely.
Nobody,
all that argument about human prototype and put him in the museum,
right.
That's exactly what you said.
Nobody, when you press him, will say he means identity. And yet, if I take the logic of their argument, almost all the logic of such arguments proceeds as if identity were achievable, as if there were some way in which you could measure individual equality. As Tom Sowell was saying, you have to ask, in what direction are they moving? See, the fundamental distinction between you and me on this, I believe, is a very different one. I think there's all the difference in the world between a social or governmental system in which 90% of the people tax themselves to help 10% who are in distress, and a system in which 80% of the people in the middle try to tax the 10% on the top in order to help the 10% at the bottom. What you end up doing is you end up, Mr. A and B in the ancient story of the forgotten man, you end up with A and B imposing taxes on C to help D, and some of it, after all, in the process, gets in the hands of A and B.
You're dodging the fundamental issue which was brought up by Tom Sell. Are you saying to us that the only form of equality that one's entitled as a society, in your view, to be concerned with is equality of opportunity, and any concern with inequalities of result is illegitimate, that any inequality, however great, thrown up by, provided it's thrown up by a free market system and not by a caste system or a feudal system of which kind you disapprove, that any concern with that is wrong? Are you saying that or aren't you saying it? Because it's all important.
Concern with whom? By whom?
Concern by the society.
The society doesn't have concerns.
It has governments, only it has laws, people, it has parliaments.
Only people have concerns. People do certain things through government. And I'm not going to talk about society having values. Society doesn't have values. People have
values. All right. Is it wrong for people to be concerned about inequality?
It is not wrong for individuals in their private capacity to be concerned. Anybody who is really concerned can do something about it on his own.
Is it wrong for them to elect governments which do something about it? You yourself
it's not wrong for them to elect
You yourself have supported a negative income tax, which is a way of doing something about inequality.
It's not wrong for us to do something through government about distress. Yeah. But there's a fundamental distinction between relieving distress and doing something about inequality. I see no justification whatsoever for cutting down all the tall trees in order that there be no tree in the forest
that
is taller
than the other. When you say that it is wrong for government to intervene in the free enterprise system to do something about inequality, you evoke a model of a free enterprise system which does not exist and has never existed to a significant extent in history or anywhere in the world. That so-called free enterprise system has always used government. The entrepreneurs of that free enterprise system have always used government. And the question that you raise is whether other people can use government to achieve their ends. The free enterprise system, as it is spread around the world, as it is spread to Asia and Africa and Latin America, has spread through the force of arms, among other things. And those arms were wielded by governments. That was government intervention under the name of the free enterprise system, but a government intervention which destroyed the freedoms of many people, not least of which are the people of Chile.
I agree with you that everything called free enterprise is not free enterprise. I agree with you that many things have been done under the name of free enterprise that are not consistent with free enterprise. I agree with you, and we stress over and over again in this series, that whenever businessmen have the chance, they will, of course, use government to pursue objectives which may or may not be in the interest of the public at large. But you always are talking about mixed systems, and I challenge you to find a single example in history at any time of any society where people have been relatively free, and I don't mean merely what you call merely economic freedom. I mean freedom in the full sense. I mean freedom of individuals to pursue their own objectives, their own values, to live their lives. I want you to name me any society in which you've had any large measure of that freedom, where capitalism and free enterprise has not been the predominant mechanism for controlling economic activity. Not the sole mechanism, but the dominant one. I want you to name me one exception.
Your conception of freedom, does that apply in Chile today?
Where the Chile is not politically free. Chile today does not have political freedom, and I do not condone, but let me go on for a moment, if you will. You raise the question, let me answer it. Chile is not a politically free system, and I do not condone the political system. But the people there are freer than the people in communist societies because government plays a smaller role, because the free enterprise that has been emerging has been cutting down the fraction of the total income of the people spent by government because unemployment has been going down, output has been going up, food production has been going up. The conditions of the people in the past few years has been getting better and not worse. They would be still better to get rid of the junta and to be able to have a free democratic system. What I have said and what I repeat here is that it's a necessary condition. You cannot have a free society, in my opinion, and I know no counterexample, and I challenge you to produce one. You cannot have a free society unless free enterprise plays a substantial role.
Let me come back, though, to your theory of equality, Milton, because I'm confused about it. You say there is a widespread demand for equality of material condition.
Absolutely.
Now, I don't know of a political party in a democracy that advocates that kind of equality.
Well, I look at
I challenge you to name one, a major party in a democracy which is advocating the kind of equality you've presented as a major threat to freedom.
I'm perfectly willing to take your Labour Party. I'm perfectly willing to take some segments of our Democratic Party, which have certainly advocated programs directed toward that objective, of course. in the practical political structure of democracies, and there's no question but what Britain, like the United States, is fundamentally a democracy and among the freest nations in the world, despite the growth of intervention. In a democracy, you proceed slowly. You don't proceed at one fell swoop. If you take the societies which have ostensibly declared free equality as their basic goal, the societies like China and like Russia, there's no question, we all agree that those are terrible, tyrannical societies. And so in a country like Britain and the United States, you have stopped very short of the objective, but there's no doubt what the objective of the parties has been.
Well, I think Peter may want to come in here, and I should say that in this one, I shall take the opportunity to play a bit myself, because you're right squarely in my area of special interest.
That'll let me be the moderator for a change.
Yes, indeed. I don't accept for a minute that there has been a calculated move to absolute equality in the social policy of Britain since the war. And I've lived there during the time. I write the history of it. I teach social policy. And you're wrong on this one, Milton, but I give it to you, Peter.
Well, I think Milton
That's what's known as a 1-2.
Yes.
Milton is still equivocating as to whether he is attacking the idea of absolute equality, in which case his examples of the Labour Party, his examples of some sections of the Democratic Party just don't stand up, or whether he is maintaining the proposition that any concern to reduce inequalities of result, of outcome, not of opportunity, but of result, is wrong. Now, if he is saying the second, it seems to me that arguments that he's made don't tend to show that result. Well, just let me finish, because we let you finish.
Okay.
It is perfectly reasonable for a society to say, or for people in a society to say, and together through their political process to express the thought that there are many objectives that society has. Efficiency is one, prosperity is one, freedom is perhaps the most important of all, that concern about equality, or at least about reducing inequality, is another, and that we should ask ourselves the question, are all the inequalities that we face, the gross inequalities described in Dickens, the gross inequalities which you yourself reported in India, the gross inequalities which you yourself said in the film were offensive and were unfair, are all of these justified by the criteria of freedom and efficiency, or are some of them unnecessary? In other words, we take the principle that there should only be such inequality as is necessary and justified by one of the other criteria of a society. Now, if you're willing to say that, then you're not in disagreement with anybody. If you're denying that, you've made no arguments to support what you're saying.
Now, before we have Milton reply, we must bring in Thomas.
I think we're talking at cross purposes. On the one hand, we're talking about results that we're hoping for. On the other hand, we're talking about processes that we're setting in motion. You're saying, should we hope for certain kinds of lessening of inequality and so on? The real question, the political question is, shall we set in motion certain processes because we hope for that? And do those processes enhance or reduce freedom? And I think the argument that Milton is making, certainly the argument that I would make, is that the attempt at doing these things, and it doesn't really matter, it's a complete straw man to talk about absolute inequality.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. Throughout the film, this is the straw man he brings up in order to say how ridiculous to have absolute equality. And then he goes on to say how ridiculous to have absolute homogenization as well.
As a result, you see, that you set up processes whose end result may not be any more or less inequality than exists now. But the question is, those processes may indeed reduce freedom greatly. I would go beyond the question of equality and put it more generally, that any process to ascribe any status to any group of people, equality, inferiority, superiority, must necessarily reduce freedom. Because whatever the government wishes to ascribe to any group, whatever place, to use the phrase that was very common in the South, that blacks should have their place, whatever place the government is going to assign to people, that place will not coincide. That place will not coincide either with what all those people are doing or with how others perceive all those people, because there's too much diversity among human beings. To maintain any system of ascribed status from the top is going to mean reducing people's freedom across the spectrum. That's the point.
People have an ascribed status. It isn't as if government, by its intervention, creates it. People are born into this world in a given sector of a society, and many, many of them are born at the bottom of the society. The argument about equality of results was an argument that was linked to equality of opportunity. People recognized that unless there was a degree of equality in a degree of enough food, enough security, access to education. Unless these things were available to all children, then equality of opportunity was merely a mockery. That's why equality of results became an issue, and it became an issue for black people in the United States, and they expressed their concern, whatever the opinion.
You expressed
polls,
it, damn it, look. They did not.
They expressed their will by their extraordinary participation in a protest movement that began in the late 1950s and didn't end until the 1960s. Intellectuals were not in that protest movement.
You want me
black
to answer or you want to keep going?
In that
you want me to answer?
I finished.
Yes. Good. Black people have never supported, for example, affirmative action, POTUS, anything of that sort. Wherever polls have been taken of black opinion on such matters of should people be paid equally or should there be this or that, black people have never taken a position that you describe. So it is not a question of what black people chose to do. It's what you choose to put in the mouths of black people. It is what you choose to project. It is not what any black people have ever said anywhere that you can put your finger on.
It's what you choose to put into the mouth of the pollsters, as far as I can see.
I put in the mouth of
the leadership of the black community.
Like most people, I have never seen a pollster.
If you look at the leadership of the black...
But I want to go back to the... I want to carry it back to the earlier point. Number one, there's no question about what equality of results, if it comes about through a framework of freedom, is a desirable result. Number two, I argue in the film, I've argued here, that in point of fact, you get greater equality of actual results by a system under which people are free to achieve unequal results. That for the poor people of the world that Francis Fox Piven was talking about, the most effective mechanism for enabling them to improve their status is not a governmental program which seeks to ascribe to them certain positions, which seeks to provide them with certain goods and services, but a governmental program which tries to eliminate arbitrary barriers to advancement. I would say that in this world, the greatest source of inequality has been special privileges granted by government. That government, you may talk a great deal, there may be a lot of talk about how we're going to eliminate inequality. But if you look at, go back to your case of Britain, is there any doubt that one of the effects of governmental intervention in Britain has been to create new opportunities for special classes? That the way to get wealthy in a society that supposedly is aiming at equality, that the way to get wealthy is to get a special government permit to import, to get foreign exchange or to import goods or to, in this country, to set up a television station. Those are the ways in which you get inequality.
Well, I think, Milton, you grossly misrepresent the British experience, and here perhaps I might make the points. First of all, the burden of taxation in Britain is lower and has been for many years than in any other of the countries of the European community, the overall burden of taxation. Secondly, you will immediately come back and say, but the marginal rates of personal taxation have been extremely high. Perfectly true, but not as high as they were in the United States until the early 1960s. It's interesting to note in passing that when the United States reduced its 90% maximum personal rate to 50%, the rate of economic growth in the United States, and I'm not suggesting cause and effect, fell from the previously very low rate of 2.5% a year to about 0.4%. in the period since, so that any notion that there is an absolutely one-for-one relationship between the degree of personal taxation and efficiency is wholly mythical.
Well, thirdly, I tell you, what you can
thirdly,
do with
no,
statistics.
You ought to look at the facts. It's easy to make glib remarks about statistics.
Look at the fact
that in Britain, over the last 30 years, during which period, according to you, Britain has been crushed by egalitarianism, whereas the United States has been soaring away in a glorious state of liberty, the rate of economic growth in Britain has been faster than that in the United States. How do you explain that?
First of all, I have to look at what the figures mean in Britain. I have to look at the way...
First, you'll look at them.
I have looked at them, and you realize that in judging output in the government, that's judged in terms of cost, not in terms of product. And what I really ought to look at is not the rate of growth of GNP as the statisticians measure it, but the consumption available to people in forms which, as people value it, ultimate consumption. If I look at that, I get a very different picture. The statistics are very, very, as you know very well, are very easy to use. They can be used to throw light, or they can be used to cast confusion.
One should look at facts.
The amount of goods and services
consumed by the government as a proportion of the national output are no higher than Britain than they are in the United States, and haven't been any time since the war.
They have risen very
which
sharply.
Which may be the explanation of the low rate of growth in the United States.
They have risen very sharply. It has risen very sharply in the war.
In both countries.
Since the war, in both countries. Mm-hmm.
It is higher in Britain than it is in the United States,
no,
properly measured.
25% in both cases.
The proportion,
well,
excuse
well,
me, I want to take
services.
Total, excuse yeah, me, look, that we, again is a statistician's nightmare.
No,
we have to look at total government.
You were the one who was talking about whether or not people have freedom to choose how their money is spent. The transfers, which is pensions and other payments from government, leave the freedom as to how the money is spent in the hands of private individuals. It's only the direct consumption of goods and services where the bureaucrats are making the decisions.
It leaves the decision for freedom in the hands of the recipient. But
yes,
not in
gentlemen,
the hands
gentlemen,
of
gentlemen
in
back
hands.
In my chairman's role, can we leave the statistical debate? Fascinating, I'm sure it is. I want to make the point, Milton. It seemed to me, and I am not British, I'm Canadian, having lived a great deal in the UK, it seems to me that you really have most unfairly used the UK as a whipping boy in the last third of your film. Because you say for much of the century, the British have tried to use the law to impose equality. Now, the Conservatives have been in office for 65% of the
time.
Let me finish it. There have been three majority left governments in Britain. And it is not the case at all that, unlike other parts of Europe, there have been consistent policies aimed at equality. Taxation is lower. There's no wealth tax. There's a wealth tax in eight other Western European countries. Capital gains tax came in only 10, 15 years ago.
But let me take your case. First of all, conservative labor, that's not the issue. I have argued again and again. I do
but
again.
But the conservatives not pursued equality.
I do in a book which is associated with this series. I make the point that the policy of Britain in the past 60 or 70 years owes more to the philosophical idea of the Tories of the 19th century than it does to the ideas of Karl Marx. In the United States, in the 1930s, the Socialist Party never garnered more than a few percent of the vote, but it was the most influential political party in America because its policies were adopted by both the Republicans and the Democrats. In the same way, what you have to look at is not whether the Conservatives or the Labour Party is in power, but what were the basic philosophy and ideas, the ideas of Fabian socialism, of Tory paternalism, were being affected by both the Tories, and the Labour
Party. Really. It would have been some very surprised Tory politicians and some very surprised voters to hear what you say. But let me give you another example of the way you're playing fast and loose with the facts. You talk about crime in Britain. I mean, crime in Britain is a tiny fraction of what it is in the United States and has been throughout that period.
That's
when you
true.
Say that we're so
one
egalitarian and you're so free. You talk about able people being driven out of the country. More qualified people are living and working in Britain than at any time in the last 150 years of our history. Now, this is largely because of the granting of independence to the colonies, the loss of empire, if you like. But in fact, for example, doctors, which Endersley talked about, more British-trained doctors are now working in Britain than at any time in our history.
It's also true that the physicians leaving Britain, emigrating from Britain,
amount to one-third
as many as a number of people graduating each year from your medical schools.
I think it's a mistake to...
that happens to be...
argument for the free enterprise system by selectively using the example of England when you want to, the United States when you want to. The test of your argument about the free enterprise system and its capacity to produce both freedom and greater equality to relieve poverty, the test of that argument has to be made everywhere that the free enterprise system has been extended, has penetrated. The test of your argument is not only in what happened to England and the ostensible decline or not the decline of the English economy or what happened in the United States. The test of that argument has to look at what the free enterprise system has meant for the majority of people who do not live in England and do not live in the United States, who do not live in the mother countries, but rather live in that part of the world where most people live and where most people have had their lives disrupted. Peasants have lost their land. Traumatic destruction.
You've got to compare...
Because of the free enterprise system.
Excuse me. You've got to compare something with something. Will you tell me the alternative which has improved the lot of the ordinary people? What is the system which, in your mind, has been successful? Most people through most history have lived in tyranny and misery. It's only a very tiny minority at any time that have been able to escape from it. That's the real beauty. That's the real achievement. Now, will you tell me what the alternative system is which has achieved?
Well,
tell me what.
Excuse
me.
And I say that elsewhere in the world.
What's the alternative? What's the alternative? What's your alternative?
The free enterprise system is of itself not an alternative because, as you agree, it does not exist. We are arguing really to defend those interventions which have been made by government on the behalf of people in an effort to reduce inequality, in an effort to reduce oppression.
And tell me, which of those are you defending, in which of these countries where those interventions have benefited the masses? In most of the countries where you have departed from the free enterprise system, you have had a small class benefited at the expense of the masses. If you take the African countries, which have become one-party dictatorships, are you going to tell me they have benefited the masses?
I'm astounded by the examples of the third world that are brought into here. Those parts of the non-capitalist world in which the capitalist system has penetrated are typically higher income places than those parts where they haven't. Are you talking in any kind of testable hypothesis, or is it just axiomatic that it's so? Because the studies that I've seen indicate that those countries where capitalists have never gone near them are poorer than they've ever been. They were poor before the capitalists got there, they were poor while the capitalists were there, and they're poor after the capitalists have left.
Your measures of wealth are not measures of wealth of a people. They are measures, rather, of gross national product.
Give me your measures, then.
Which reflect, as in the case of Chile, which you don't want us to discuss, which reflect the great advances that have been made by the middle classes and the upper classes in Chile, as of this date, at the expense of the sharp decline in the income of working people. No. The Catholic Church...
Those are not the facts.
Well, I still think Milton has not told us the answer to the question, what is he saying? And it's very important we should know what he's saying. It seems to me that he should accept the fact that nobody is arguing for absolute equality and disregarding all other social and human objectives. He should accept that it is perfectly reasonable, widely endorsed, and perfectly logical for people to say, amongst other social political objectives, reducing inequality is a perfectly sensible one, and that in those cases where you can show that you can get a big gain in equality for only a very small loss in freedom or only a very small loss in efficiency, that is a sensible and legitimate thing to do. And if it involves government action by, for example, income tax or negative income tax, that is a perfectly proper and sensible thing to do. And if he's denying that, then I still say he's given us no moral or ethical arguments to explain why he is denying that perfectly proper concern with equality along with freedom, efficiency, and other human objectives.
The answer to that is that you can only serve one God. And that it's stating that there are many, many of these objectives is evading the fundamental issue. In addition
Common
to
sense.
That, as an empirical matter, the attempts to achieve equality along your lines to lessen inequality have generally backfired. They have generally reduced freedom without, in fact...
In Germany?
Yes.
In Japan?
Yes.
In France?
Take the Japanese case, which is a marvelous case. Not now, but 1867, after the Meiji Restoration.
Right now. Hell with 1867.
Well, the reason for taking it then is because you had a far greater measure of free enterprise then than you have had more recently.
That's my point.
In almost all cases, the way to promote equality is the same as a way to promote, as an outcome, is the same as a way to promote freedom. If you promote freedom, if you remove arbitrary obstacles, you open the way for people to use their resources, you will end up, in my opinion, and I think the empirical evidence is overwhelmingly on this side, you will end up with both more freedom, more prosperity,
you're a closet
and
egalitarian.
More equality.
You're a closet egalitarian, really, then.
I am not.
You support the objective.
I would like to... there's an enormous difference between liking to see a result and being in favor of a particular method of achieving that result. Because if I were wrong, if freedom led to wider inequality, I would prefer that to a world in which I got artificial equality at the expense of freedom. My objective, my God, if you want, is freedom. The freedom of human beings, of individuals, to pursue their own values. That will also...
Well, there we leave this discussion at the University of Chicago. I hope you'll join us for another edition of Free to Choose.
Want more episodes like this? Don't forget to subscribe and get updates each week for the Free to Choose Media Podcast.